I'd like to call this meeting of the Legacy Conference Committee to order. And the first thing we'll do today is just go right around the table and introduce yourself so that we have a little bit better knowledge of who we are. We'll start with Senator Scalzi.
State Senator Bev Scalzi. I represent 9 Ramsey County cities right up until almost to Anoka County, suburban cities.
Michelle Fishbach. I represent part of Stearns County and part of Benton County.
Carlin Doyle Fontaine, Senate Counsel.
Dan Mueller, Senate Fiscal Analyst.
Josh Nye, CLA to the Senate Finance Committee.
Greg Knopp, Senate Analyst.
Casey Mom, Senate Fiscal Analyst.
I'm Katie Steben, Senator representing parts of Dakota and Washington counties. And I should mention that I'm filling in as chair right now for Senator Cohen, who's in negotiations over at the governor's residence.
I'm Representative Dean Erdahl. I represent Meeker County, part of McLeod County, including half the city of Hutchinson, and one township and city in Wright County, that being Cokato.
I'm Gavin Hansen, House Committee Administrator for the Legacy Committee.
Leah Patton, CLA for Legacy Funding Finance in the House.
Paul Torkelson, State Representative for Olive Brown, most of Redwood, and two townships in Renville County.
I'm Danny McNamara out of Hastings.
I'm Phyllis Kahn from Minneapolis, most of southeast Minneapolis, and a little bit of south Minneapolis.
I'm Josh Heisman, representing the Brainerd-Baxter area.
I don't know how much.
Janelle Taylor with House Research.
Mary Mullen with House Research.
Brad Hegemer with House Fiscal Analysis.
John Walls, House Fiscal Analysis.
Yeah. Abby Loesch, House GOP Research.
And I believe we missed one.
Nicole Kaplan, Senator Cohn's CA.
Okay, well, thank you. And what we plan on doing today, we'll go through the spreadsheet. We'll do a side-by-side comparison. We'll have some testimony, and then we'll adjourn. So we will not be making any motions to adopt any of the items today. So with that, we begin by going through the spreadsheet. Mr. Walls, I think you were, or Mr. Hagemeyer.
Mr. Chair, yeah, I can start by going through the spreadsheet. I think members have it in the back of their pocket. Packet, sorry. Do all the members have the same spreadsheet? And if you want, I can go really high level here. I can point out each line, Mr. Chair. Just, would you like a high level by?
Yes, please.
Okay. The House and Senate are very similar on the Outdoor Heritage Fund on page 1 under the prairies. They both appropriate $40,948,000 in the first year for 12 projects. In the Forest Division, there are, I believe, 8 projects totaling $12,634,000 for the House and $14,822,000 for the Senate. The one difference in forestry here is the Senate is carrying on line on the first page of the spreadsheet on line 19. Sorry, there's some feedback. Protecting forest wildlife habitat in the Wildrice River watershed for $2,188,000, and the House does not have that provision in the bill. If you go to the second page under wetlands, there are 5 appropriations. The House is appropriating $22,578,000. The Senate is appropriating $20,390,000. The one difference there is line 37, the Accelerated Shallow Lakes and Wetlands Enhancement, Phase 7. The House appropriates $2,188,000 more than the Senate does. If you start on line, on line 40 under habitat, both the House and Senate appropriate $22,368,000 for the projects listed there. And then under the administration budget, both the House and Senate have $1,465,000. The total appropriation from the Outdoor Heritage Fund for both the House and Senate is $99,993,000. And you can see the appropriations listed by department that they go to as well, where the Department of Natural Resources receives $91,265,000. The Board of Water and Soil Resources is $7,513,000. And then the Legislative Coordinating Commission gets $1,215,000. And that's a very high level of the Outdoor Heritage Fund. If you'd like any more detail, Mr. Chair.
Anyone have any questions? Nope. Proceed.
If you go to page 3, we can start on the Clean Water Fund. The total appropriations for the Department of Agriculture from the Clean Water Fund, the House is including $5,834,000 the first year and $5,832,000 the second year. The Senate is appropriating slightly higher at $8,584,000 the first year and $8,582,000 the second year. The differences here are on line 81, the Minnesota Agriculture Water Quality Certification Program. The House has $1 million for the biennium. The Senate has $5 million for the biennium. And if you look at line 83, the perennial cover crop research, the House has $500,000 for the biennium, and the Senate is including $2 million for the biennium. If you go to line 87, the Public Facilities Authority, both the House and Senate appropriate $18,500,000 for the biennium. Under the Pollution Control Agency, the House is appropriating $52,498,000 for the biennium. The Senate appropriates $57,708,000 for the biennium. The differences are on line 93. The Senate is appropriating $400,000 more. On line 95, the Senate appropriates $1,610,000 more. And then if you look at lines 105 and then the missing line below it, the missing lines below 105, the National Park Water Quality Development Grant, the Senate includes $3 million. The House does not have an appropriation similar to that. And the Red River Watch Program, the Senate includes $200,000 for that program. The House does not have that provision included. If you go to page 4, you'll see the Natural Resources Department. The total appropriations for both the House and Senate are $17 million for the biennium, and there are no differences with the appropriations. If you go to line 120, it's the Board of Water and Soil Resources. The total appropriation for the House is $116,263,000 for the biennium. The Senate is $102,548,000 for the biennium. The differences are on line 121, the grants to watersheds with multi-year plans. The House includes $17,858,000. The Senate includes $11,480,000. On line 122, the surface and drinking water protection and restoration grants. The House includes $29,550,000. The Senate has $27,780,000. The missing numbered line under line 122, and I'll get these numbers cleaned up. I know there's one other error we'll fix and get new copies to members. The Washington County Gray Cloud Slough Habitat Improvement is $520,000 one time in the Senate bill. And then if you go to line 126, riparian buffer permanent conservation easements, the House includes $20,087,000. The Senate includes $15 million. And on line 135, the Soil and Water Conservation District grants, the House has $1 million and the Senate does not have this provision in the bill. If you turn to page 5, the Department of Health, both the House and Senate appropriate $7,825,000 for the biennium, and there are no differences in the funding there. Then under the Metropolitan Council, the House includes $2,450,000 for the biennium. The Senate has $3,950,000 for the biennium, the difference being on the missing line between 150 and 151. The inflow and infiltration reduction program grants, the Senate included $1.5 million, and the House does not have this provision. The total appropriation for the Clean Water Fund bill, the House has $226,202,000. The Senate has $224,697,000. And if you look at line 159, there is a cancellation of a previous appropriation that the House is counting $1 million for. And Mr. Chair, that's it for the Clean Water Fund, unless you have any questions or want more detail on any of them.
Any members require anything more? And we'll continue.
All right, Mr. Chair, if you go to line 161, you're on Article 3, the Parks and Trails Fund. Under the Department of Natural Resources, the State Parks and Recreation Areas and Trails receives $35,304,000 in the House bill and $35,124,000 in the Senate bill. Then the grants to regional parks of statewide significance outside the metro area, the House includes $17,651,000, the Senate includes $17,564,000. Both the House and Senate on the missing line between 164 and 165 include appropriations out of that amount for the Greater Minnesota Parks and Trails Commission for their work with the money and with their process. And line 165, the Parks and Trails collaboration among partners, the program works between the Met Council Parks, the DNR, and the Parks and Trails of Greater Minnesota Regional Parks and Trails Commission. They all use that money, but the appropriation goes to the Department of Natural Resources. If you go to the lines under line 167, the Senate included a provision for $260,000 for the University of Minnesota for Parks and Trails Framework and Inventory. The House does not have that provision. Line 168, the Metropolitan Council Parks. The House appropriates $35,304,000. The Senate appropriated $35,124,000. And the Senate has two pieces listed there, $50,000 for the Phelan Park Chinese Garden and $150,000 for the culturally relevant activities field facilities. The total appropriation out of the Parks and Trails Fund for the House was $89,350,000. The Senate had $89,163,000. And Mr. Chair, that's all for Article 3, unless you have questions.
Any questions on Parks and Trails? Continue. Representative Kahn.
Mr. Chairman, I don't quite understand this notation on the Metropolitan Council Parks. Who has the culturally relevant activities facilities, or does no one?
Representative Kahn, I think that's the City of Maplewood.
No, no, but I'm talking about the House and the Senate. I don't understand.
Oh, the Senate.
And that's something that we've never quite done before?
I don't know, Zevkon. You've been around here longer than me. Senator Scalzi.
Not longer than like.
That is, for people of color, that's the Tulu. It's a cultural Hmong tradition, and half of the Hmong people in St. Paul have been born here, and that's a cultural provision. There's some discussion whether or not it should be in arts and cultural or in parks and trails. The intent was to be in arts and cultural under the humanities division.
Representative Kahn.
Why isn't there some attempt to do this in the amateur sports facilities appropriation? That seems much more appropriate to me.
Senator Scalzi?
Mr. Chair, I could not answer that question. I'm not on the Legacy Committee.
I'm just...
Representative Kahn, I think the debate for this will be following when we get to that. Okay. Anything else? Proceed to the next item.
Mr. Chair, moving on to page 7 for the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund, the differences are more numerous in this area. I will try to proceed relatively quickly. On line 175 for the Board of the Arts, the House has $2.2 million for arts preservation in the Capitol. The Senate does not have such a provision under the Board of the Arts. Under Arts and Arts Access, the House has $43,540,000, the Senate $46,405,000. For arts education, the House has $8.1 million, the Senate $8.7 million. For arts and cultural heritage, the House has $3.5 million, the Senate has $2.9 million, a total of $57,340,000 for the House, $58,006,000 for the Senate. Moving down to line 182, the Minnesota Historical Society. For statewide historical grants, the House has 11.6, the Senate 11.2. For historical society programs, the House 11.66 million, the Senate again at 11.2. For history partnerships, the House has $4.64 million. The Senate has $4 million even. Historical site survey on line 186, $580,000 for the House, $600,000 for the Senate. For digital library, again, $580,000 for the House, $600,000 for the Senate. The House has a historical recognition fund to which communities or projects may apply. That is $3.35 million on the House. There is no such provision on the Senate. Mr. Chair, moving down to line 191, Minnesota Department of Education for regional public libraries, each side has $4 million. I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. There is an error in the spreadsheet. The Senate has on line 193, $2.9 million or $2.95 million each year for a total of $5.9 million. Those should be entered in up onto the line above. And so there's an error in the spreadsheet that will be projected. So it's $4 million for the House, $5.9 million for libraries in the Senate. Moving on to line 195 in the Department of Administration, the House has $113,000 for the Big Marine Veterans Camp. The Senate has no provision. For Minnesota Public Radio, the House has $2.834 million, the Senate $3.2 million. For Ampers Public Radio, the House has $2.834 million, the Senate again has $3.2 million. For Minnesota Public Television, the House has $6.834 million, the Senate has $7.8 million. For Wilderness Inquiry, the House has $500,000, the Senate has $200,000. For Como Zoo, the House has $2.25 million, the Senate $1.5 million. For the Great Lakes Aquarium, I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, on line 202.
Don't forget that's the only one we agree on.
The Senate, for the Science Museum of Minnesota, the House has $2.25 million, the Senate $1.5 million. Am I on the right line? I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. I'm going to back up here for a second. For the Como Zoo, the House has $2.25 million, the Senate $1.5 million. For the Science Museum of Minnesota, there's an agreement at $600,000 each year or $1.2 for the biennium for each body. For the Great Lakes Aquarium, both bodies have $250,000. Lake Superior Zoo, the Senate has a provision for $300,000. The House has no provision. For the state band, the Senate has $50,000, the House has no provision. For the Midwest Art Conservation Center, the Senate has $100,000, the House has no provision. For the historic memorial bust, the Senate has $30,000, the House has no provision. And Mr. Chair, the House has $1 million for capital art preservation under the Department of Administration. The Senate has $3.25, but if you include the $2.2 million, the House has in the Board of Arts, there's only a $50,000 difference for that item. Mr. Chair, moving to the top of page 8 under Minnesota Zoo, the House has $2.25 million, the Senate $3.5 million. Moving down to line 211, the Humanity Center. For Humanity Center programs, the House has $1.65 million, the Senate has $1.7 million. The Senate includes $150,000 for Council on Disability. The House has no similar provision. For Heritage Fund competitive grants, the House sets up a competitive grant program for which projects may apply of $1.8 million. The Senate has no similar provision. For the Minnesota Children's Museum, Mr. Chair, the House has $500,000 each year, the Senate $475,000. For the Grand Rapids Children's Museum, the House has $125,000 each year. The Senate includes $250,000 but appropriates the money $150,000 the first year, $100,000 the second. For the Duluth Children's Museum, there's $125,000 each year for the House, $200,000 each year for the Senate. For the Children's Museum of Southern Minnesota, $125,000 each year for the House, $400,000 the first year only for the Senate. For the Minnesota Civic Education Coalition, there's $300,000 on the House side, no similar provision in the Senate. and the Kajug Fonka program, $200,000 on the House side, no similar provision in the Senate. For the Perpich Center for the Arts, $1 million total for the House, $1.4 million for the Senate. Under the Indian Affairs Council on line 225, $2.5 million for language preservation in the House, $2 million for the Senate, and the House includes a cultural resources program of $75,000 each year, which is not included in the Senate. Moving down to the U of M Board of Regents, the Bell Museum of Natural History receives $250,000 in the House, no similar provision in the Senate. The legislature revisor's website receives $800,000 in funding in the House and no similar provision in the Senate. Mr. Chair, there's a total of $124,215,000 in spending in the House and $123,336,000 in the Senate, and that concludes the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund.
Any questions or comments on the spreadsheet? Right, then proceed to the side-by-side.
Mr. Chair, members, they'll be working off the side-by-side, and we'll start with Article 1, which should be in your binders. And I'm just going to highlight the differences, you know, ignoring any really minor technical differences. So the first difference in language would be on page R7 of Article 1. And here you'll see the Senate has the language for the White Earth Nation project that was eliminated in the House that you saw on the spreadsheet. And then the next difference on the, I'm not going to go through the numbers, they're on the spreadsheet. So the next difference would be on R17. You'll see the House has a report requirement that would require the Lessard Sam's Outdoor Heritage Council staff to put together a report on land acquisitions with outdoor heritage funds and also some other related provisions. And then skipping ahead to page R21, this is the first of several instances where you'll see a difference between the House and the Senate. It's relatively minor, but on line 21.24, you'll see that the House refers to the Council on Disability, whereas the Senate refers to the appropriate governor-appointed disability councils, boards, committees, and commissions. And then on lines 21.30 through 22.3, you'll see the House has a provision that would encourage recipients to use conservation practices that promote monarch butterfly habitat. And that then section 3 on the bottom of R21 is another House-only provision. This would encourage the DNR to plant milkweed when feasible. And then moving to page R22, section 4, if you skip ahead to R23, this is where the actual language changes are. You'll see on lines 23.21 through 23.25, this would modify the appointment process of Lessard Sam's Outdoor Heritage Council staff, so the appointment would be made by the LCC instead of the council upon coordination with the LCC. Then we'll skip ahead. The next several sections are the same. I believe the next difference would be on page R38 and R39. You'll see another House-only provision that would require MMB to put together some recommendations on alternatives to PILT for lands purchased with outdoor heritage funds and other dedicated funds. And that would conclude Article 1. Would you like me to proceed to Article 2?
Any questions on Article 1? And proceed, please, Ms. Taylor.
The first difference would be on R40. Again, this is just that disability, the Council on Disability change. The House and Senate have the same differences there. And then the next difference would be on the bottom of page R42. The last rider on either side, the HOSUM, is providing funding for perennial and cover crop research program. You'll see that on line 43.23 and 43.24, whereas the Senate is providing funds for the Forever Green Agricultural Initiative. And then on the top of page 43, you'll see some House-only language that allows a portion of the big appropriation to be used for training staff in the intersection between agricultural economics and agricultural conservation. The next difference would be on page R44. You'll see on the Senate side, there's a carve-out for the Riverwatch program that you saw on the spreadsheet. And that would be on lines 41.5 through 41.18. And then on the top of page 45, there's just some minor differences on how the House and Senate provide funding for the St. Louis River system area of concern. The Senate would target that to what's implementation of the remedial action plan, whereas the House does not. The next difference would be on R47. There's a Senate-only rider for grants for sanitary sewer projects within the Voyageurs National Park area. And then the next difference would be on R48. You'll see on lines 48.14 and 48.15, the DNR technical assistance would also be allowed for water quality protection in forested watersheds. And the next difference would be on R50. You'll see that the House has some additional language on 50.16 through 50.19, allowing a portion of the funds to be used to seek administrative efficiencies. The next difference would be on page R51. You'll see that the last rider there on the House side, on line 52.19, 52.20, the funds would also be allowed to be used on lands with expiring CRP contracts. The next difference would be on page R54. This is just from what you saw in the spreadsheet. This is the House provides $500,000 each year for SWCD general service grants, and then the Senate has a rider for the Gray Cloud Slough. And then on 54.26 and 54.32, you'll see that the there's an instruction here for the Bowser to consider the inclusion of environmentally suitable annuals the next time they revise their vegetation guidelines for riparian buffers. On page R55, there's just some minor differences in wording in the first rider in the Department of Health, and I won't go through those. Skipping ahead to R58, you'll see the Senate has a rider for the INI reduction program funds that you saw on the spreadsheet. The next several sections are from the One Watershed, One Plan program, and these are virtually identical. There's one minor technical difference. And then on page R63, there's Senate has an additional section 16. And then on page R64, the House has a provision that modifies the Clean Water Council makeup, making the U representative and the Met Council representative non-voting members. And then on the page R65, if you remember from the spreadsheet, the House had canceled $1 million worth of appropriation from a previous appropriation. And the Senate, instead of canceling that particular appropriation, modifies the use, and it's for the shoreline grants. And if you skip ahead to the bottom of R67, you can see the differences. The House is just striking that, whereas the Senate is restructuring that program. And then the next section is on page R70. The Senate has section 18 that modifies a previous appropriation to the Board of Water and Soil Resources, you'll see the actual changes on page R72 that allows $1 million for grants for SWCDs for riparian buffers. And that would conclude the differences for Article 2.
Anyone have any questions on Article 2? Welcome, Senator Stump.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Proceed.
Okay. On Article 3 for the Parks and Trails, on page R76, you'll see that same difference in the Council on Disability. On page R77, you'll see there's some differences here with the way the House and Senate treat the Greater Minnesota grants. The first difference you'll see on 70.26 through 70.30, the House has the grants for those outside the Metropolitan Council jurisdiction, whereas the Senate has it outside the 7-county metropolitan area. It doesn't specify that same definition. You'll also see the Senate has some additional sort of carve-outs on 73.18 through 73.26 for the Mesabi Trail and the Douglas County. And then there's the House, you'll see on line 71.7, the Greater Minnesota Regional Parks and Trails Commission, they provide money for operating costs, whereas the Senate specifies that it's for their duties under existing statute, and then including development of a statewide system plan for regional parks and trails. There, also, I forgot to point out on 73.6 through 73.8, there's a carve-out stating that the appropriation includes money for the Goodhue Pioneer State Trail on the Senate side. Then on page R78, at the top, you'll see two riders on the House side. The first would require the Greater Minnesota Regional Parks and Trails Commission to put together a prioritized list of projects and then also put together a report that states their criteria for regional parks and trails. And then on R79, you'll see what we were talking about earlier from the spreadsheet. The Senate has a little carve-out for the Metropolitan Council appropriation for Ramsey County for a grant for the Minnesota China Friendship Garden Society and for the culturally relevant games, and that's on 75.2 through 75.13. And then the last major difference would be on R80, and you'll saw this in the spreadsheet. The Senate had the $260 for the use center for changing landscapes for the mapping, and the rest of it is identical. And that concludes our Article 3.
Any questions? Continue. Oh, I'm sorry. Representative Kahn.
I'm going back to the place where we talk about the listing of the grants and the planning from the greater. That's art on page. Can I find the right page? So normally where we talk about the requirements of listing the grants and the requirements of the analysis of the procedures. What page is that?
Representative Kahn, will you talk in your mic, please?
So,
Mr. Chair, Representative Kahn, I believe you're talking about R78 that requires a Greater Minnesota Regional Parks and Trails Commission to put together
the
criteria.
That's the one. And I think when we, Mr. Chairman, I think when we were doing this, we were told the first one, 71.8 to 71.18, was actually in existing law. and somehow it wasn't done. Anyone going to give us an explanation about why it wasn't done? And then the next thing is looking at the criteria for funding. Because we kind of model this Greater Minnesota Regional Parks and Trails over the Metropolitan Regional Parks and Trails park system, which has really worked very well in separating regional from local, from the neighborhood parks and so forth. And we didn't want it to be done differently, I think, in Greater Minnesota. So the question is, how is it being done? I don't need the question right now, but I just wanted to point out those two parts of the House bill.
All right, thank you. Ms. Mullen?
Chairs and representatives, Mary Mullen from House Research. I'm just going to highlight the changes in Article 4, the differences, and Ms. Doyle Fontaine will jump in and help me if I get anything wrong on the Senate side. The first change is on page R90 in the Article 4 appropriation. The House has an appropriation for arts preservation in the state capitol complex. On page R92, at the bottom of the historic grants program for the Historical Society, there's just a slight language difference there. The House provision points to the use of funds potentially being available for the Gunflint Trail Historical Society for the Chickwack Museum. And the Senate has similar language, but for the design and reconstruction of the Hibbing High School auditorium. And there is a Senate-only provision that amends an appropriation from 2014 in Chapter 295 for the Minnesota Historical Society and provides new language for that appropriation to be used for the Fulda Heritage Society and as well as the Chickwack Museum that was mentioned previously on the House side. On that same page, on R93, the House has a carve-out in the Historical Society Programs appropriation for the Minnesota Historical Society to work with the Minnesota State Council on Disability for a museum installation. At the bottom of page R94, in the Historical Society appropriation, the House language has a new grants program, the Historic Recognition Grants Program, so the language for that is provided there. On page R96, the House has a provision for an appropriation for the Veterans Rest Camp, and the language that goes with that is there. On R97, the Senate has an appropriation for the Lake Superior Zoo that is a Senate-only provision. And on R98, there are three Senate-only provisions. This is within the Department of Administration for the Minnesota State Band, the Midwest Arts Conservation Center, and the and for a historic memorial bust for the Capitol. On page R99, the House has some additional grant reporting language that applies to the Minnesota Humanities Center, and that's only on the House side. On that same page, R99, the House has a small carve-out in the programs appropriation to the Minnesota Humanities Center for the Veterans Voices Program. And the Senate has a provision, has an appropriation for the Council on Disabilities that the House does not have. Also on page R100, the House has another new grants program, the Heritage Grants Program, which is administered by the Minnesota Humanities Center, and that language is on R100. On page R101, the House has two provisions the Senate doesn't have for the Civics Program appropriation and the Kajug Fonka Program. On page R102, there is small language differences related to the appropriations for the Indian Affairs Council. The Senate appropriation has a small carve-out for the Nagani Immersion School, and the House side has additional funding for the osteology lab for American Indian human remains. On R-102 at the bottom, there's the beginning of an appropriation for the Bell Museum. There's no Senate provision on that, and there's also an appropriation on the House side for the LCC, for the website. There's no Senate provision that matches that. There's a very small language difference on page R-103 between the House and the Senate on the disability access language. It has to do with who the recipients of legacy funds are consulting with in developing their accessibility plans. On page R-104, there is, a technical difference between the two state band provisions, but they're that's just technical. At the bottom of R-104 is the beginning of it's Section 2, Section 3, and Section 4 of Article 5. On the House side, the language is very similar in these four sections. It just amends the statutes for all four funds with language that allows the legislative auditor to create a public list of legacy fund recipients who have not complied with laws or rules that are applicable to them. The list makes them signifies that they're ineligible for funds, and then it allows the auditor to, again, remove them from the list when they've demonstrated compliance. There are not Senate provisions that match these four sections. There is one Senate language change at the bottom of page R-105 related to money appropriated for the Parks and Trails Fund, which cannot be spent to acquire property by eminent domain unless the owner requests that the owner's property be acquired in that way. And that is all the changes, differences in Article 4 and 5.
Senator Sieben.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Could you, Mr. Chair, or someone on the House side, please explain more the language on 92.15 to 92.20, the Legislative Coordinating Commission website?
That provision is for rulemaking, a website for rulemaking to make them more accessible. And I guess we'll have more discussion about that as we go along.
That sounds good.
Any other comments?
Mr. Chairman, over here.
Senator Stump.
Thank you. I was just wondering on R-94, I have two questions. One's on R-94 and one's on the second one's on 104. But on R-94, is there language that goes with the Historic Recognition Grants Program? Or what exactly is that?
Senator Stump, the language is what you see there. It's included in funding that we were providing for the Historical Society for other programs that they might wish to fund.
Okay, I missed the language on the next page. The other question I had is on R-104. I think I have found the House and Senate bonding bill at the top of the page.
Mm-hmm.
really not a question. It's more of a statement.
You know, actually, Senator Stumpf, when I saw that, I thought the same thing. This could be the start of the bonding bill right here. Representative Torkelson?
We've got both chairs.
I guess it's a technical correction from last year.
Okay.
Any other questions or comments on the side-by-side as presented? Well, then, I guess if there are those in the audience who wish to testify on any portions of this, they may do so.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Sieben.
Could we hear from Mark Johnson from the Lassard Sams Council,
please? I believe
that
Mr. Johnson is here, and I'm sure he'd be eager to testify. Welcome. Identify yourself, please.
Mr. Chair, Mark Johnson, Executive Director for the Lassard Sams Outdoor Heritage Council.
Questions of Mr. Johnson. Senator Sieben.
Mr. Johnson, thank you. And I understand that you're relatively new to the council, but I'm sure you're aware of some of the past history with the legislature where the council has made recommendations and there have been assurances from both bodies that the council recommendations carry a lot of weight. And even at times when individual legislators may disagree with that, either because of the geographic balance of the makeup of the recommendations or other factors, there seems to me that there has been this recognition around the Capitol that the recommendations of the council are supposed to be good for, to go fairly far, at least from the Senate's perspective. Recognizing that you're new, could you please speak to the history of that or why the council made the recommendations then for the White Earth proposal too, which I know is the one difference between the House and Senate versions of the bills?
Mr. Johnson.
Mr. Chair and Chair Sieben, from a historic standpoint, just to give you the best of my information, the council, of course, the council was put into or was developed under Minnesota Law 97A.056, and that was in large part because of very heavy communication between the stakeholder groups and the legislature, looking at making sure there was a citizen component to the council rather than just a legislative component. What came out of that was a council which I believe most of the stakeholder groups feel is pretty adept at looking at projects and looks at them in a rigorous fashion to see are they good projects, are they not good projects, and so on. Each year the council looks at virtually all of, well, they look at every project that comes in. This last year was the second year in a row where the council had a project from a tribe asking for monies for acquisition. Last year it was actually the Fond du Lac Band. This year was the White Earth Band. And that project received high funding from the council, or high recommendation from the council, based on its biological aspects. It was biologically, it's a good project. That's what the council felt. Would you care for more?
Senator Sieben.
Mr. Johnson, if you could just talk a little bit more about what the project does specifically, or what habitat is being restored and that sort of thing.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, Chair Sieben, the project itself, actually, if you can hold just a second, I'll grab my book here and I go right to it.
And Mr. Johnson, I do see that Mr. Haas is here, who represents the band. If you want him to help explain the project, we would welcome that.
Chair Sieben, that would Mr. Haas has some good information on it. He actually represents the tribe here.
Welcome. Welcome, Mr. Haas. Introduce yourself for the record, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Bill Haas, and I represent the White Earth Band of Ojibwe in northwestern Minnesota. This project is approximately 2,000 acres of land located within the reservation of White Earth in Clearwater County. This particular parcel of land is important because some of the land borders along the Wild Rice River. The Wild Rice River flows into the largest wild ricing lake on the reservation, which is the Lower Rice Lake. That lake produces about 200,000 pounds of wild rice a year, and that equates to about 1.2 million plus of revenue for not only the tribe but also tribal members who harvest that wild rice. Give you a little story on why we want to protect this. Actually, Representative Purcell brought it to my attention, but his first position up in that area was with the Soil and Water Conservation District. And what happened is in the late 70s, there was a chicken farm. It was called the Nelson Chicken Farm. And they had manure pits for the droppings from the chickens. Well, unfortunately, those manure pits leached into the Wild Rice River and killed all the wild rice in that lake. And Representative Purcell's job was to clean up the water and restore the wild rice, which he did. And so that is why White Earth would like this property and that Potlatch is selling, is so that we can further protect that lake and the resource that it provides to band members. We have had discussions with the DNR on this land because White Earth will own it. They will manage the property. We have been good partners with the DNR and with the state of Minnesota in managing programs, not only for the DNR but for the Department of Human Services. We've been a good partner. This land would be open to hunting, to fishing. It would have access. We've actually addressed some of the concerns that were brought forward by Clearwater County. Those concerns Senator Scoy has addressed in the tax bill. The first concern was the fact that there was a loss of property taxes, approximately $12,000 to $15,000 a year in property tax loss. Senator Scoy has language in the tax bill that would include federally recognized tribes that would have land purchased through the SARD. SAM's project would be eligible for PILT payments, and so that would cover the concern that Clearwater County has and the fact that they would lose tax revenue. They would receive a PILT payment under that provision. The other concern that the county had was the fact that the they currently have logging access that Potlatch allows them to their landlocked land from this area. And so White Earth has agreed, and it was something we weren't concerned with from the start, that all accesses would be continued to be maintained and open. And there is comfort language that has been put in, I believe it is in this bill, it was added in the Senate provision, to keep all accesses open and maintained for logging purposes. So that is a description of the property, and we feel it's a very good project. It'll benefit both the area. And one of the other things is we will manage this property in conjunction with the DNR and the Federal Wildlife Services, so we will be consulting with them, so it'll be a partnership there also, even though White Earth will be paying the cost to manage it. So stand for any questions.
Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess first I'd like to ask, just to put a little historical perspective, folks are concerned. They want to make sure that the legislature doesn't modify the recommendations of the Lessard Sam's Outdoor Heritage Council. Mr. Johnson, when we bought Mississippi Northwoods, the original proposal was for one kind of a landowner when it passed Lessard Sam's Outdoor Heritage Council. It was proposed to be owned by the state of Minnesota. And in the end, we changed that ownership to Crow Wing County. So that modification was made, and that bill was signed into law with a different owner. Mr. Haas, I think we need to acknowledge here that we run into problems when we have landowners other than the state of Minnesota owning land when we buy it with Lessard Sams. If we look at Mississippi Northwoods, we have 25 miles of ATV trails on Mississippi Northwoods that the Lessard Sams Outdoor Council did not realize they were going to be open unless marked closed. Because Crow Wing County, even though it's a county south of Highway 2, has a policy on their county forest land where ATV trails are open unless marked closed. If that land would have been bought by the state of Minnesota and been a state forest, those ATV trails would be closed today. The reality is we now have 25 miles of ATV trails that are open and are probably being ridden on today, completely legal, and Crow Wing County, for the most part, wants it to stay that way. We run into real challenges when we buy land, especially large tracts of land, with money from the state of Minnesota sales tax and have entities own it other than the state of Minnesota. And I think Mississippi Northwoods, the challenge of the bike trail, the challenge of now the county wants to exchange land for commercial development. We're just running into all kinds of challenges that we wouldn't have. Mr. Haas, wouldn't it make sense? This land is owned on three sides by an existing wildlife management area. The tribe does a great job of managing natural resource land. Why wouldn't we want to have DNR own this as a WMA and have the tribe manage it for the DNR? The tribe does such a great job of managing natural resources. It seems like we could use this as an example. And it is surrounded on three sides by a WMA, and I think you could begin to see where I'm coming from. I think there's a real opportunity for the tribe here. Seemed like we could find a solution that would work for all. I'm just wondering what your thoughts are.
Mr. Haas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative McNamara. Yes, this property is surrounded not only by wildlife management area, but it's county land, state land, federal land. So there's a conglomerate of jurisdictions that own the land surrounding it. There's also tax forfeiture land that's located within the project area. To your question about the change of the scope of the project, I think that's the best way to start to answer your question. And then you'll see where I'm coming from. Yeah, I do agree with you that when you look at setting up a bike trail and the scope that this Lessard Sams project approved that project, and then all of a sudden now it's turned over to another entity and they're running ATVs and a totally different use. Yeah, I would also take issue with that. Looking at this project, we have already had the discussions with the DNR on two issues. One, first of all, if sometime in the future White Earth says we do not want to continue to manage this property or we don't have the resources to manage it, the land reverts back to the DNR. It does not go to anybody else. It will go to the DNR, and the DNR will then take control of the property. Okay? If White Earth puts restrictions on the property, other than the wolf issue, then the property will go back to the DNR. So the state has a fail-safe in this, even though the land would be held in trust by the U.S. government. That's where the land would be held in trust. And then White Earth would then manage it. And I had a conversation with the chairwoman this morning. In fact, you and I conversed yesterday, Representative McNamara, about this issue. And the chairwoman said that they would like to have total control of the property as it went through Lessard Sams, with the caveats that we've agreed with the DNR that would be in the agreement on what we just talked about.
Thank you, Mr. Haas. Representative McNamara.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, but Mr. Haas, we need to find a solution here to this issue, mm-hmm. and we have to recognize that we're having troubles when we buy land and give it to somebody else to own it when we're paying for it with state tax dollars. And I think we have an opportunity here for the tribal nation to have this land that's within their territory and get it in the management of the tribe, free to manage it for how you want to manage it, and if it's gray wolves today or walleyes or wild rice tomorrow. The reality, the Native American tribe does a great job with natural resources. Mm-hmm. It's more than a vocation to them. And I think it's important that we give them an opportunity to show the great work you can do. And I'm hoping that you can go back to the chairwoman and convince her that there's an opportunity here, or we could lose out. There's just a great opportunity for you to show an example here where we could use this going forward for additional opportunities. And I hope that you'll see the light here on a way to make this work, because we have a precedent that we can modify who owns the property after it's passed Lessard Sands. We did it in 2011 with a much substantially larger project than this one, and I think it's going to, as a matter of fact, the governor actually vetoed a purchase of a Native American tribe the year after the one I'm talking about, or 2 years maybe, Madam Chair, when he vetoed Representative Kahn's inserting the Fond du Lac the year before it happened. No, you put it in and he vetoed it, and the next year you put it back in and we passed it, right? It was 1 year.
Representative Kahn.
I don't remember that it was in the bill. I think it was not put in after in conference committee. These people who know more than I do can say that.
Anyone have any more stellar memories?
Mr. Chair, we can look that up. But Representative Kahn's recollection is a little closer to what I'm thinking right now. I know it was in the House bill at one point, but I don't think it was coming back from conference. There was some Metro Parks money in there and some other things that you vetoed, but I don't remember this being part of that.
I'm pretty good at remembering grudges.
No comments. Mr. Haas, a question that's come to me regarding holding in trust. The access will be kept open.
Correct.
And that's through a trust agreement. But the question is, if the tribes just decided to close it anyway, what are the chances of then taking away the trust status? I mean, that wouldn't happen. Mr. Haas, how would you respond to that comment?
Mr. Chair and members, from my discussions and from my understanding, that any restrictions that the tribe would put on the property, the land would revert back to the DNR based on the agreement that we will enter into with the DNR.
All right, thank you. Mr. Johnson?
Mr. Chair, the council's intent all along has been to have the same type of condition here as with the Fond du Lac Band, where, again, like Mr. Haas says, there's a NOFR, Notice of Funding Restriction, that's on the title that would call for revert back to the state for title should the agreement not be held.
Which one's first? These two.
Whatever.
I'll flip. Representative McNamara.
Well, thank you for that. But Mr. Johnson, the tribe is free as a independent nation to set, and they already do set their own seasons for game fish and wild rice, and they have different seasons than we have. And Mr. Haas, maybe somebody is saying, you know, today we're willing to say it's only gray wolf, which I accept. I'm willing to let the tribe manage it however you want. If you want to start shooting moose tomorrow, I think that'd be a huge mistake. I don't think you're planning on doing it. If I'm not mistaken, one or two of the tribal nations could do it if they wanted to still, and I think they don't. And you might manage walleyes different or wild rice. I think your season's a few days different. But you're free to change those, and you can say with a hook and a wink and a nod to the DNR, we don't plan on doing it. It's only gray wolf today, but it could be walleye tomorrow, and there's nothing we can do if you change it. You already do. Their hunting seasons are substantially different than ours currently.
Mr. Haas.
Mr. Chair and Representative McNamara, that discussion came up early, and I did check with the Department of Natural Resources for White Earth, and White Earth mirrors the hunting seasons that the state of Minnesota has. The only difference is in deer hunting. They allow party hunting, where if I hunt deer, can get tags from other elderly band members and shoot their deer for them. They allow that, but otherwise they do mirror the state hunting regulations, so it doesn't create confusion for members and non-members of the band for hunting purposes on the reservation.
Representative Kahn.
Mr. Chairman and members, I thought all through this there are appropriations that are given to non-state people to be managed. There are lots of them. There are lots of private, I think.
You're talking about nonprofits,
yes,
Ducks Unlimited,
yes.
Peasants Forever,
sure,
things like that.
Sure, all through that. So I don't quite understand why this one is that different.
Representative McNamara, would you explain the difference?
Well, with the exception of, I said other government entities, no. The Pheasants Forever and Ducks, yes, Unlimited act on behalf of either the U.S. Fish and Wildlife or the Department of Natural Resources, and act as an intermediary for the purchase to be owned by a public entity. Nature Conservancy has a model where that NGO actually stays as the owner but pays real estate taxes. That's a model different, but I specifically mentioned other government entities and kept the NGOs out of the discussion.
Well,
Representative Kahn?
I guess I don't quite see what the difference. It seems to me an NGO is further removed from the state than another governmental entity. But we don't require the state to retain ownership or management of all these things. So I don't quite see what the difference is here.
Okay. Thank you. I think we could excuse you two at the moment, and perhaps I was going to bring up the DNR.
Oh.
But you have questions for them yet?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I do. Just
Mr. Johnson?
Maybe he left.
Senator Stump would like to.
This is more trying to maximize the federal dollars that the governor is seeking in terms of what he calls his buffers. And I was going through the spreadsheet here maybe a week or so ago, and I had counted about 15 different areas where buffers were part of the language and the appropriation. So, and then visiting with Mr. Johnson, I said I had found these 15, and the governor is interested in matching federal money. So if we put up, you know, roughly $250 million over 5 years, that if the circumstances are right, the federal government would contribute $500 million. And this would go toward cleaning up our waterways and streams. Anyway, Mr. Johnson, you mentioned that there wasn't 15 different programs, there was 17. So what I think would be something, at least to get out there, is that if there would be a way to structure the program so that they could be counted toward some sort of a federal match, would be important in terms of accessing those federal dollars. And that's just, I don't have any language at this point, but I just wanted to mention that is something that could help attract more money from the federal government, and I'll leave it at that for right now.
Thank you. Any comment on that or anything?
No.
All right. And Representative Torkelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator Stump. You know, this is kind of news to me and perhaps to others. Do you know the source of these federal dollars and just what they might be used for?
Senator Stump.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Torkelson, I don't have all the details, and I don't think there is a signed agreement between the governor and the U.S. Department of Agriculture, but I think that it was part of the ag appropriation bill that was passed. And so I would assume that it has probably something similar to Lake Crepe. If you remember a few years ago, there was quite a large amount of money that Minnesota received through the Crepe program, and we matched it with state appropriations. This seems to be about a 1-to-2, you know, so for every one state dollar that's put in, there's approximately 2 federal dollars. I don't remember the exact match under the old CREP program that we had, but I think it was somewhat comparable.
Representative Torkelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Senator Stumpf. I look forward to learning more about this initiative.
Representative McNamara.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I need to apologize for my esteemed colleague to the right.
Even though she's
got a couple years on me in age, and Mr. Chair, just for the record, how bad my memory is, and it's considering the fact that Representative Kahn was my state representative when I was in college, and I'm eligible for Social Security. Her memory is better than mine. It was a House position for Fond du Lac, but it did not survive conference committee, so it was not one of the things that Governor Dayton vetoed. It was my bad memory that it never survived conference committee. So, again, Representative Kahn outdid the Irishman, so sorry.
Well, thank you, Representative McNamara, for that clarification. And once again, we should never doubt Representative Kahn. Today, anyway. Well, I guess, gentlemen, you are excused, and there's been a request to see Commissioner Meyer, I think.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and committee members, for your consideration.
Thank you, Mr. Haas. Thank you, Mr. Meyer. Identify yourself, please.
Mr. Chairman, members of the record, Bob Meyer, Department of Natural Resources.
Thank you. Do you have any comments on the White Earth discussion?
Mr. Chairman, we do appreciate the discussion. We do support the recommendations of the Outdoor Heritage Council and support the Senate position on the proposal.
Thank you. Any questions or comments regarding the DNR's position on this? Representative Kahn.
I'm interested in the DNR's position on those two parts. I've already forgotten what page it's on that I talked about asking for more information on the regional Greater Minnesota Parks and Trails. We're 78.
Oh, is that the priority list that you're
yes.
referring to?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Kahn, could you be more specific of the language you're looking at exactly?
This is actually the Greater Minnesota Regional Parks and Trails Commission, but
line 71.19, page R78.
But it certainly has to also coordinate with things that DNR is doing. I mean, if it's something that you haven't followed, then
okay. So, page R78.
Page R78, two house positions. 71.8 to 71.30.
This is the asking the Greater Minnesota Regional Parks and Trails Commission to submit a list of projects ranked in priority order and other items.
And if the answer is that DNR doesn't pay any attention to that, then that's the answer, I guess.
Does Representative Kahn is wishing to know if the DNR pays any attention to that?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Kahn, the DNR pays a lot of attention to the park system, not only in the state, but all greater Minnesota and the metropolitan area as well. The three entities have been working very closely together over the past bienniums to make sure that we have a coordinated approach as we move forward. The language here, I can let Director Rivers from our Division of Parks and Trails speak to it, but it would also be good to probably hear from the Greater Minnesota Parks and Trails Commission as well on this.
Thank you. Ms. Rivers, identify yourself, please.
Mr. Chair, this is Erica Rivers, Director of State Parks and Trails. Representative Kahn, in direct response to your question regarding this language, I do encourage you to, I don't see anyone in the audience today here from Greater Minnesota Parks and Trails Commission, but my understanding is that this language was added because of the timing of the granting process. They are able to submit a list of priority regional areas, parks and trails of significance for this round of granting here in 2016. But going forward in 2017, I think there was some desire from the committee to have a prioritized list from the commission ahead of time so that you could review that work for 2017. That was my understanding.
Thank you. Any other comments or questions on that? Any other comments or questions that are DNR related?
Mr. Chairman, if we may just real briefly talk about some language that's on page R80.
Okay, Mr. Meyer.
Specifically, this is a Senate positions related to the University of Minnesota, the Center for Changing Landscapes. There was some discussion, I know, in the House committee on this as well. And I can have probably Director Rivers speak to this as well. We do have some concerns about continuing of this funding project without some direct coordination with the implementing agencies. There's been approximately $600,000 currently or in the past biennium's appropriated for these activities, with the deliverables to date being somewhat lacking. So we are concerned that if this proposal is to move forward, that the entities have direct involvement and perhaps a direct grant or some kind of link to this project, and I can let Director Rivers speak to that more if you'd be willing, Mr. Chair.
Well, thank you, Mr. Meyer. Ms. Rivers?
Mr. Chair, members, as Assistant Commissioner Meyer mentioned, we do have some concerns about the ongoing funding of this project and some of the collaboration that has or hasn't occurred over the last 5 years that this project has been in place. We're also very concerned about the duplication between the work that is being done here and that's being done with the coordinating agencies with Minnesota Geospatial Commons, a collaborative project that's being done separate and apart from this work that's being done from the Center of Changing Landscapes. In addition to that, Minnesota Statute 3.303 also requires the Legislative Coordinating Commission to track legacy projects, and there is our understanding that they have already created a mapping project for projects that are funded through the Outdoor Heritage as well as Clean Water Council, and this project does very similar work to that. It's our understanding that the LCC has every intention of doing this very same work with the Parks and Trails Legacy Commission, or the Parks and Trails, the Legislative Coordinating Commission, rather. So we see this as work that's very duplicative work that's already going on both within the agencies as well as with the Legislative Coordinating Commission.
Thank you. And you have communicated a change suggestion to us. Would you care to outline what you think may be helpful in this?
Mr. Chair, members, what we've been discussing is possibly doing an appropriation through a grant that we would be able to work with the University of Minnesota to complete the legacy tracking project and to implement a survey on the use patterns, user needs, and perceptions related to parks and trails in Minnesota, and that the tracking and project survey work be done in collaboration with the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources, Metropolitan Council, and the Greater Minnesota Parks and Trails Commission. We had some discussion about this in the Senate, and I do agree with Senator Stump's comments that we had that the information about user perception and to have being able to compare apples to apples would be very useful. Right now, the Metropolitan Council implementing agencies track usership one way, we track a different way, and Greater Minnesota tracks yet another way. So having some kind of common data that we can use, and that Representative Torkelson and Senator Stumpf and the legislature can have to make decisions on what should be our next investment into a park system, or where should these trail systems be, would be very useful for us. So it's not that we do not support the work that the university is recommending here. We just want to make sure that we're involved closely and that we finally get to the end point of these projects, and that we have a usable end project, that product that we can apply to our everyday decisions and implementation and management of these systems. I can provide this language to you, Mr. Chair, if you're interested in seeing it.
Well, thank you. I believe I have if it's the proposed amendment you're discussing, I have that language.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman. Representative Kahn.
I guess I've been a little concerned, I think, with the Legislative Coordinating Commission for all of their things, not just this, for their doing information stuff outside of Minute. And I think we've brought the whole rest of the state in to Minute, and it's time to look at, you know, particularly when these things go in other agencies that are controlled by Minute, and now suddenly, because it's through the LCC, it's not going there. And the Minnesota Geospatial Commons, I think that's controlled by Minute. I'm not sure.
Not either.
But I would just like to see as much information and control in one place as we possibly could.
Comments on that, Ms. Rivers?
Mr. Chair, Representative Kahn, yes, that's correct. Minnesota Geospatial Commons is part of Minute. It is formerly the DNR Data Deli that has migrated to Minute Central now. So within the appropriation that comes to DNR, there's $536,000 the first year and $553,000 the second year. These are on line 71.31. These are funds that we use to coordinate with partners, and it would be most appropriate if funding for this kind of collaboration were to come from that pool of funding.
Senator Stump.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is on a different subject. Is that right?
DNR related?
Yes.
Continue.
It's on page R21, and I think I'm not sure how this got in here, but on the House side on 22.4, where it says, when feasible, the Commissioner of Natural Resources is encouraged to plant milkweeds. Well, I've always, you know, as a farmer, I've always considered milkweeds weeds. And I don't know what, I mean, We our farm's right across the
Be
road.
Be careful, Senator Stump. This got Representative David's in trouble. Right about now.
Mr. Chairman.
Right across the road from our farm is DNR wildlife land. And honest to goodness, I know they don't take care of their weeds. I mean, we've got thistles and we've got tons of milkweeds and all kinds of dandelions, and I know if you were a farmer, you'd feel the same way.
No, perhaps our problem is semantics. Maybe we should need a statute to change it to milk flour. Representative Kahn.
Well, the best thing that, as you suggested to Senator Stump, is that he talked to Representative Davids, because Representative Davids made some negative comment about milkweed and about spraying butterflies and that, and he came in the next day and said, you don't know how many people love butterflies. And he then became our highest proponent for anything that we did related to butterflies from then on.
Well, so. And Representative Davids, in his office now, has a butterfly balloon, and he's still believing in it. Representative Stump, this is related. Senator Stump,
I did serve in the House.
Yes.
That's why you said good.
This relates to Representative Kahn's legislation dealing with monarch butterflies, and apparently the milkweed is an essential to the development of the monarch butterfly, and we are experiencing in Minnesota a great decline in this species, so that's what it's about.
Might have to visit with Representative Kahn.
Yes. Representative Kahn?
I do have photos of all of these that I can send you. The other thing is that dandelions are the most important early pollinators that are out at this time of the year, so they're really important too.
Representative, Commissioner Meyer, do you have any comments on butterflies, milkweed, or?
Mr. Chairman, Member Senator Stump, this language came in through the bill from the House in the markup process, but you know, monarch butterflies cannot survive without the milkweed. Their caterpillars need milkweed to actually survive. So without the plants, and due to changing landscape management practices, we're seeing a very severe shortage of milkweed. And actually, a local nursery in the metropolitan area this weekend was giving away free milkweed seeds to help provide monarch habitat. And as far as managing the weeds on our property, we try to do as much as we can to manage our property the best of our ability, and a lot of the funds within the outdoor heritage appropriations help us to manage our lands in a better way to leave a lasting legacy. So we do understand the concerns. However, we're working the best we can on that issue. But butterfly habitat and pollinator habitat is, as we know, a very serious thing to pay attention to.
And again, it says where feasible, where it's, you know, where it makes sense to do it. I don't think they're going to spread milkweed over the whole state. Further comments that are DNR related? Thank you, Commissioner Meyer. And Ms. Vogel would care to reply to some of these comments. Has she stepped out? Well, does anyone else wish to? Denny McNamara, Representative McNamara? All right. Thank you, Mr. Rice. I know. Welcome, Ms. Vogel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Identify
I'm Mary
yourself.
Vogel, Center for Changing Landscapes, University of Minnesota.
Anyone have any questions of Ms. Vogel? Or Ms. Vogel, do you care to comment on some of the previous comments made about your center?
Yes, I would like to comment on that. If members do not have any questions.
Proceed.
We were initially asked to create the inventory and framework program by the legislature, which we did. The first round was for $400,000. We worked with every county in the state and created a substantial inventory of parks and trails. This inventory listed parks and trails that were local to federal, on the ground, planned and proposed. This document has been used by DNR and the Department of Transportation for their planning purposes for years. And we have received many compliments on the nature of the work. However, when we started this adventure, we knew that it was a challenge. Contacting and working with 87 counties is a challenge. And we also knew that the information that we gathered would be good, but far from perfect. So the second round has been an effort to correct some of the shortcomings of the first effort. In the process of doing this work, we changed our strategy. Rather than having to come and ask for more money to update the work, we decided to create a self-perpetuating system. We also were asked questions about, could we make the current data that's available from the legacy projects that were mapped or that were followed by the LCC more specific. Many of the projects were identified as statewide, and there wasn't an opportunity to really understand where the money was actually being spent. So we have developed a prototype for tracking legacy funds. We have consulted all three of the current the Greater Minnesota Commission, the DNR, and the Metro Council on this effort. But I think there's a misperception on the part of some people that this information really goes beyond those three systems and the legacy allocation process. We are engaging MnDOT in their work, so that, as you know, they are embarking on a Minnesota bike trail system, and we are planning to, if we get appropriations, we are planning to move forward with them. Their planning process did not accommodate work in this biennium. They informed us that they would be ready by the end of August or the first part of September this year to work with us more closely. They also complimented us on the work that we had done and told us how useful it had been to them. We also feel that in working with the individual counties and helping them record what's out there in terms of parks and trails will be a valuable tool for further decision making, both from the three entities and also from public policy decision makers. We are in the process of talking to DNR about some making sure that their data gathering and our data gathering is compatible. The meeting that we had scheduled a couple weeks ago had to be canceled because of a health issue that I had. I do look forward to the opportunity to complete this work, because I think it's valuable both to the state as a whole and to the three commissions. As for the user survey, has been completed. However, because we had such a strange winter, some of the data that we were able to test really needs another winter to make sure that it is a strengthened project. We also recognize that there are different capacities within the three entities identified at Metro Council, DNR, and Greater Minnesota. And if we receive funding, we will help level the playing field and assist those that need additional help in the implementation of the user survey. Thank you very much. Are there any other questions?
Yes, thank you, Ms. Vogel. Does anyone have any questions of her? Well, thank you. Any other testifiers who wish to come forward?
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Could we please hear from the Department of Administration on some of the differences over the Capitol Art Restoration in the two versions of the bill?
I think we could. They seem to be here. Welcome.
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Wayne Wislosky. I'm the Senior Director for Real Estate and Construction Services for the Department of Administration. I appreciate the opportunity to come and talk a little bit about the restoration of the fine art in the Capitol. As many of you have probably already heard, much of that art is located in difficult-to-reach places.
So as we have the scaffolding up in place for the overall restoration work, now is the opportunity to restore the fine art within the Capitol. In Chair Stephen, if you just want me to walk through, I think the main difference seems to be the overall amount approved by the Capitol Preservation Commission was $3.25 million. And I think the main question is legacy versus bonding versus cash funding. And the question certainly seems to be mainly around the bonding and what's bondable art and what's not. I would defer much of that conversation to MMB. I think hearing from them directly on that would be important. We haven't had bond counsel through to review all the specific pieces of art. They've given some general guidance that if it's affixed to the building, that it's potentially bondable. And as you know, with the Capitol, you have some art that's painted on canvas, and then it's framed to the wall. So that's potentially art that could be bondable. Our greatest concern from the Department of Administration is just the assessment of the fine art is not completed yet, so we don't know. We have not yet seen an allocation of cost to the specific pieces of art. Obviously, legacy funds or cash funds would provide the greatest flexibility to make sure that we don't get in an issue of not having, if it's somehow split between bonding and legacy, that we don't have enough funds in the right bucket to complete the restoration of the fine art.
Thank you, Mr. Wasowski. So we have both sides about $3.2 million. This is what I think we have been told is non-bondable fine art money. Do you agree that this is the amount that we should be looking at?
Mr. Chair, members, that is the amount that we, working with the Historical Society and our construction team, that is the correct amount that for the overall cost of the restoration of the fine art, the $3.25 million.
Okay, thank you. Any questions regarding that? Senator Stump.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was just wondering when construction or the renovation was going to start in the House chamber.
Mr. Chair, I'm happy to answer that question if you'd like me to.
I got all kinds of ways that I can answer that one, but I'll let you do it.
Mr. Chair, this is obviously an important issue from the overall restoration project standpoint. Senator Stump, I appreciate the question. We have about 50 subcontractors that are lined up basically waiting at the door, ready to start work, and we need to get folks moved out on a very timely basis. Matter of fact, 12:01 a.m. On the 19th, you'll see our plan, our schedule has starting to move furniture at that point. And the chamber desks, it's not just the House chambers, it's the senators and the senator spaces as well, that we have a very aggressive move schedule. We have three move companies lined up. We have Gephardt, our electrical subcontractor, coming in that next day. We have the abatement contractors coming in that next day, so we very much appreciate a timely finish to the 2015 session. So respectfully, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Wasowski. So you're on record as saying you don't want to see anything happen that would throw off your schedule.
Mr. Chair, members, it would have certainly cost and schedule impacts, and it is from a schedule standpoint, we've got some things that are on a critical path date, and obviously being able to reopen for the 2017 session is the most critical date. That's a constitutional start date, and we have some items that take a long time to finish, and we need to get going right away in May with that work.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chairman, no covering the clock on Monday night.
Well, Senator, that might be a good idea. But we'll be done much sooner in the House. I have been provided a list of some folks that may be interested in testifying. So I'll go in order of the list here that I have been given, and if you don't want to testify, just say you don't. Mr. Leith.
Mr. Chair, members, I'm Gary Leaf with Sportsman for Change, and just kind of want to testify in support of the Senate version of the Outdoor Heritage Fund and the Lessard Sam's Outdoor Heritage Council recommendations that you've gotten brought before you for the seventh year. I just want to give a little background on the legacy amendment. Of course, it was started by Senator Lessard in the Senate with a 1/8 bill, and someone who doesn't get enough attention was Representative Holston, who also was the House author of the bill, 1/8. These became known as the fractions bills. They had numerous versions of them, the 3/16, the 1/4, and ultimately the 3/8. I think there was even a 0.5-cent version at one time. Some existing taxes, some new taxes, and this went back and forth. Some of the original versions had a citizen governance council in it, which was the Game and Fish Oversight Committee, and that was more of a version which was dedicated funding for the DNR. A lot of us on the hunting and angling side have great admiration for the DNR, but we'd like to see a more competitive and open system. And I think that element of the Lessard Council, meaning that it takes as one point in time where it takes all of the possible conservation projects in the state, and then through a process that was developed by Dr. Kilgore at the University of Minnesota and the council, it compares and contrasts all those projects so that the net result is the best possible projects that are available in a given year for game, fish, and wildlife projects and conservation projects. And for this reason, all of the hunting and angling and conservation groups signed a letter, as they have every year, supporting the work of the Lessard Council. There's varying projects that have varying levels of support. Representative McNamara represented a project, talked about a project that has some problems with it north of Little Falls a bit, and that's had some difficulties, but we think those will be resolved. There's also been DNR projects that have had a lot of difficulties in the past, or some difficulties in the past. So we think that this was instrumental in passing it with the voters. Clean water was a major element of it. $1 million was spent out of the $4 million just to the hunter-angler demographic in this state, and a vital piece of selling it to them and giving them confidence is that who is going to spend the money after you got it? And by establishing the council, it's led to great support, and we hope that you'll continue to support the work that the citizen members, and there's four legislators on there as well, serve Senator Engelbrecht, well, switch to Senator Engelbretson, Senator Saxhog, Representative McNamara, and Representative Dill are now on the Lessard Council. So with that, I stand for any questions that you might have.
Thank you, Mr. Lee. Were there any questions of him? All right, next, Clean Water Council. Anyone from the Clean Water Council? No one. Representative Torkelson was, but... seeing no one, we'll move to the next... Well, we do have someone now. Welcome. Identify yourself, please.
Chair and members, my name is Barb Peichel. I'm coordinator for the Clean Water Council, and I wasn't planning to testify, just here to answer questions.
Does anyone have any questions? Well, Ben, thank you. That was easy. Anyone here from the MPCA? Welcome. Identify yourself, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Greta Gauthier. I'm from the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency, and we had no planned testimony for this hearing, but we're happy to answer questions, Mr. Chairman.
Are there any questions? Well, then you got off easy, too.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Does anyone else wish to testify? Welcome. Identify yourself, please, for the committee.
Thank you. I do have a couple of things, or one, something I'd like to hand out to the committee members. If there's a page, or I can just hand them out. And thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Steve Morse. I'm the executive director of Minnesota Environmental Partnership. So we're the state's largest coalition of environmental and conservation organizations. And we don't have extensive prepared remarks, but just a few general comments. Our coalition, much like Mr. Leaf just testified, supports the recommendation from the Lasard-Sams Outdoor Heritage Commission or Council in its entirety. And I see we're very close to having that agreed to, but we support the recommendations as they came forward. Members of the, I believe both, I don't know if we did both, but we did provide a testimony earlier in the process on our support for the Clean Water Council recommendations, also for the Clean Water Fund. And I'd like to take just a minute to talk about the Clean Water Council process. Ms. Peichel was maybe a little modest in not talking about that a little bit, but the council is set up to do a number of things to oversee implementation of the Clean Water Legacy Act, which actually precedes the Clean Water Legacy Amendment. And the council this year, in making their recommendations on the Clean Water Fund dollars, really made a significant effort to open up the process, to get input from stakeholders along the way, to be transparent in their process, and make recommendations to the administration. We were disappointed in the governor's recommendations in that he effectively bypassed the council recommendations and stuck with the agency recommendations, and we expressed our concerns about that earlier in the process. And one of the criticisms we had was that, you know, nothing's perfect and time changes. The council makes their recommendations early in the process and things change a little bit as you go forward. And rather than just disregarding the council process, if there are some priorities that need to be tweaked and changed, fine, make some adjustments, but don't just sweep that whole process aside. And we think the Senate bill does a good job of striking a balance between those positions. Although it's not the entire council recommendations, it does have most of the council recommendations included. And there are a few highlights that we think are important to talk about. The main one being one that our coalition has pushed for a couple of years, which is the Forever Green initiative, which is contained in the Senate bill. And it's also in a form in the House bill. And I distributed to the committee a copy of, I believe it's this winter's solutions publication, which is from the College of Food, Agricultural, and Natural Resource Sciences at the University of Minnesota. And the cover story is about the Forever Green initiative. And I won't go into this in detail here, because I know some of you have seen this before. But we think that this is very important because it's a continuation of a project that was before this this body last year and was funded at $1 million level, although it was done out of the general fund. It was passed, I believe, in the conference committee out of Clean Water Fund, then it went to general fund. We think it's incredibly very important from a water perspective as well as for a rural economic development perspective that we provide stable, ongoing funding directly to the University of Minnesota so that they can develop this next generation of crops. We kind of liken them to smart crops, which are crops that will provide more protection for our water and our soil while providing viable income for producers. And I won't go into detail on the science behind it all, but let me just say that one of the crops that this talked about here is field pennycress. And they grow this in, it's now out on some farms around the state, but they have plots on the university's campus in St. Paul and Larpinder Avenue.
And you can go and look at those pennycress crops right now, and they are already beyond bloom. So they're up, I don't know, they're 2 feet high, full vegetative growth, and already approaching, they're already developing seeds. And I think they were blooming last week or 2 weeks ago as a first crop that will provide a lot of protection. And then the idea with that crop is then soybeans can come in behind it with a little later planting. And in total, you get more oilseed production per acre while providing cover, building health. So we think it's a real important project, and we're very glad to see the Senate have it at the full continuation level of $1 million a year. And the only other comment I would make is we also think that it is important for the Pollution Control Agency to stay on their 10-year cycle of monitoring and assessment of our waters and developing the TMDL plans. And the Senate has the full funding as requested by the PCA. We think it's really important to stay on that schedule. And we'll just pass that on. So very supportive of the council's work, but in the process, see a couple of things that can be tweaked along the way. Those would be all my comments offhand, but be happy to stand for any questions.
Representative Kahn.
I noticed the Forever Green article doesn't talk about industrial hemp at all.
Mr. Chairman, Representative
Morris, that'll be in your next issue?
Pardon?
That'll be in your next issue?
Perhaps, or the university's next issue. The way things are going around here, very well, maybe. I did share the my experience as a Senator Stump with the milkweed, though, so it's interesting to see the way these crops evolve and change over time in their usefulness.
Thank you. Any other questions of Mr. Morris? Thank you. Does anyone else wish to testify? Part two.
Mr. Chairman, thank you very much. Just
thank
really
you.
Briefly, since we're talking about the Clean Water Act, on page R48 of the side-by-side, there is a difference
in case
in the House and Senate.
Somebody just tuned in. Would you identify yourself,
please? Oh, I'm sorry. Bob Meyer, Minnesota Department of Natural Resources. And talking about the Clean Water Council recommendations versus the governor's recommendations, there was some substantial difference. The language on R48 for the DNR, specifically 48.10 to 0.15 on the House and 45.16 to 1.9 on the Senate, doing non-point source restoration protection activities, is this number is $800,000 per year less than the previous biennium. We've asked the Senate to strike the language that said including water quality protection in forested watersheds, as this will be a direct impact from this reduction in funding from last biennium. We will not be doing any mandatory work, non-point source reduction work in forested watersheds of the state. The language in the Senate allows us to do that, but it doesn't require us to do that. The other impact of this reduction will probably be going to a fee for service for some of this non-point source technical assistance activities with some of the watersheds throughout in the state. So, Mr. Chairman, as the conference committee moves forward, we're asking you to adopt the Senate language on page R48, lines 45.16 to 45.19, not include the language in the House that says including water quality protection in forested watersheds. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Stump.
Thank you. I have a question. I think it's a DNR question. And on page R27, it talks about protecting the aquatic habitat from Asian or invasive carp. And it says that we're going to do that to protect the boundary waters. Do you know where that structure is going to be?
Mr. Chairman, Senator
Mr. Meyer.
Are you looking at 24.30 to 25.5?
That's correct.
This was a past appropriation from several years ago that when the invasive carp issue first came on the scene, we approached the council and they were willing to provide this funding. And actually, this is a technical correction that would allow us to create barriers where we could purchase an easement is the really intention of this language. Southern Minnesota, where we could get an easement from a landowner to put an electrical barrier in from some of these watersheds coming up from Iowa and into South Dakota, where there's a risk from Asian carp coming into the state. Okay. Spirit Lake, I believe, is one location, and over in the Missouri River Watershed District would be the other location.
Okay.
So we've asked the council, and they did support this language to allow, including acquisition, operation, and evaluation. So the acquisition would be acquiring of an easement to install this basically electrical barrier.
Okay, I understood the bound, Mr. Chairman, I understood the boundary waters as being the boundary waters north, but I see it could be the boundary waters south.
If we get up that far, we got huge problems.
That's what I was thinking.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hopefully that's the last time I'll come up.
Good afternoon, Chair Erdahl and members of the committee. My name is Elizabeth Wafel. I'm a lobbyist with Flaherty and Hood, and I am here on behalf of the Greater Minnesota Parks and Trails Organization. I just want to keep this brief. I think there was some questions that came up earlier. I apologize. I was at a meeting off-site, not able to answer that. But regarding the list of projects, and yes, the commission is planning to make the list of projects available to the legislature as listed in the House bill. We also wanted to just express our concern. There are some provisions in the Senate bill that designate that grants be set aside for several projects. We are very concerned about that. The commission is in the process of gearing up for its continuing its evaluation process of designating parks and trails that are considered regional, as the legislature asked us to do. And from those folks that will be designated as regional, we'll be then making our grants from that process. So they've set up a really thorough process, we think, that will be really help evaluate, make sure that we've got the right projects in place, and we'd really ask that the legislature allow that process to go through. We do have concerns about setting aside for projects when we don't really know how much they cost, whether they're actually regional, things like that. And we'd like to give everybody an opportunity in Greater Minnesota that would qualify as a regional park to compete for those funds. So we prefer the House position on that. We also just want to thank both the House and Senate for being supportive of giving money to the Greater Minnesota Regional Parks and Trails, and also for providing money to the commission so that they can, have the staff and resources in place to do the work and really sort of bring up that regional parks in Greater Minnesota to the level that I think all of us want to see. So thank you very much for that, and if you have any questions, I'm happy to answer them.
Thank you. Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Wafel, I have a question. I'm glad you're not in favor of these trail earmarks. I'd rather leave it up to the agencies. But you didn't mention, did you, there's one in here for a ski hill. We have one public ski hill or quasi-public ski hill I think we should divest ourselves of the interest in. What's this one? Do you have a position on this ski hill?
Ms. Wafel?
Thank you, Chair. Representative McNamara. I'll be honest, we have concerns about it because, again, our general concerns regarding designating anything that doesn't go through the process of the evaluation. Again, we want to make sure that we're ensuring these things qualify as a regional park. As far as a ski hill, I'm not sure. The Greater Minnesota Parks and Trails created a system plan, and we're happy to go through that with any of you in more detail over the summer, but I am not sure that I don't want to say 100% certain, but I don't know that a ski hills would fit within sort of the boundaries of what is considered there. I don't want to say that for sure because I'm not a member of the commission, but we think that you need to go through the evaluation process so we could figure out whether it does qualify. So it's way too early in the process to even have an opinion.
Representative Kahn.
Well, Mr. Chairman, that's why I think the good compromise is what we got from the Metropolitan Council, where they've gone through the process, but yet we see all the individual projects. Mm-hmm. So if there's something we have comments on or want to, we could mess around with them if we wanted to. I don't think we did, but the problem is not seeing any projects from the Greater Minnesota.
Well, and I think, Representative Kahn, that's what the intent is to move toward. Is that correct?
Yes, you are, Chair Erdahl and Representative Kahn. That is exactly our intent. During the month of May, the Commission is holding workshops throughout the state for parks and trails to get an understanding of what it means to be a regional park. Then in June, we'll be opening. The Commission will be opening up its evaluation process. It's a very thorough vetting process that will sort of make designations in terms of what should be considered a regional park and trail. We've got criteria that was based on the legislature's own directive, so we'll be going through that. Then those parks that achieve that designation will be eligible to apply for the legacy grants for fiscal year 16 and fiscal year 17. We'll be delivering that list to the legislature in January. The Greater Minnesota Regional Parks and Trails are, you know, very appreciative, again, of the both the money for the parks and trails and for the commission. But we are, the commission is a relatively new organization. They are working diligently and have gotten these processes in place, and the processes are happening as we speak, and we think you will all be very pleased with what you see next January.
Thank you. Are there any further questions? All right, thank you. Any other testifiers who wish to be heard? Welcome.
Good afternoon. My name is Joan Wilshire. I'm with the Council on Disability. And just want to provide some quick clarity on the disability access section. We would really consider supporting the Senate version on the disability access accessibility section. However, for this to really be accurate and most accurate, we would suggest that the council name be listed in that amendment, since we are the only disability state agency who would be doing the bulk of this consultative work. We are the only disability state agency that has an actual building code official accessibility specialist on staff, and so we just wanted to kind of point that out, that certainly we're open to looking at that a friendly amendment, but to be most accurate, our name really needs to be inserted back in there to reflect what it is we truly would be doing. And we just want to thank you for your support, both in the House and the Senate. And that's a number, but R21, R40, R76, and R103.
Thank you. Any comments or questions about that? So you prefer the Senate language, you're telling us.
I think in order to work together, we would certainly look at that as an option, but with the opportunity of inserting our name back in there, because we will be the agency doing the work.
Okay, thank you. Mm-hmm. Anything else? You're excused. Thank you.
Well, Mr. Chairman.
Well, Representative Kahn?
I don't think I want them back up the testimony, but a little concerned about, I mean, we gave the Greater Minnesota Parks and Trails Council money 2 years ago to set all this up, and it's a little concerned that they don't even have a set of definitions, a set of criteria, and so forth. What happened to the money that they had from 2 years ago? Just that I don't know if we need an answer now, but just
I don't have. You chaired the committee last time. You can. Do you know?
Well, we gave it to them, but you're now responsible.
We can check into that, but certainly we. We are, I think, on the on the right track. Sometimes when you start a new group like this and there were difficulties in setting it up, there are they have to crawl a little bit before they walk. Hopefully we're getting there. Anything else? Anyone else who wishes to testify? I do have someone is coming to testify. Yes. Identify yourself, please. Welcome.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee. My name is Daryl Gerber. I'm the Research and Policy Director at Freshwater Society. And I just wanted to real quickly highlight a couple items in the House version that we had had worked on getting inserted in there that we would certainly like to see continued over. The first of them is on the page R43 in section line number 4331 through 4335. And that is one that stems from, in fact, all of these stem from a report that we put out earlier this year in January called Farm to Stream, in which we're really looking at opportunities to accelerate the current ag conservation programs, the voluntary programs. And this first one allows is permissive language to allow the Department of Ag to create a program to help train and educate local government staff on how farmers really make financial decisions. So that they can have the conversations about conservation in that frame of how farmers are making decisions for their business. And so it's really just trying to get the local government staff and the farmers kind of on the same page and able to have those conversations a little more effectively. Another one is on page R50. And that is on line 5016 through 5019. And this is stemming from one of the findings in which there was finding that a lot of some of the local governments were spending a lot of time on administrative work versus really allowing staff to get out from behind their desks and actually having conversations with farmers out in the field. And so this is allowing Bowser to take some of those opportunities to help local governments share resources in order to reduce that administrative overhead in order to actually get people out into the field doing non-administrative work. And then another item that we had identified is on the next page, R51, and it's at line 5219 and 5220. And that was one that, in conversations that had come up, was really actually an opportunity as a lot of farmland is transitioning out of the Conservation Reserve Program, is to be able to take advantage of that opportunity before you lose the conservation value of that land by turning it over in crops the first time, is to take advantage of that to put them in permanent easements for the wellhead protection program so that you really don't have to then redo the work again when you get the lands later down the road restoring that conservation value. And I'll stand for any questions.
Okay, thank you. Are there any questions? Seeing none, I guess you're excused. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Any other testifiers? No? No? Well, seeing none, we will prepare for adjournment here in just a second. We don't have rules as such, but I think there's one important one that we should have an understanding on, and that is that the gavel changes hands by day. I mean, tomorrow it goes to Senator Cohen, and then if we haven't settled everything tomorrow, it comes back to the House the next day, so that one of us can't hold the gavel until Sunday or something. Does anyone have any problem with that?
No.
We change daily?
Right.
All right. If there is...
Mr. Chair, I'll just add, on behalf of Senator Cohen, it's our intention Senator Cohen's intention to call another conference committee tomorrow after the last body adjourns.
So, Senator Fischbach?
And Mr. Chair, Senator Sieben, do you know what the intent is? What are we planning on doing tomorrow? More testimony, actually hitting, going through the bill, starting to take amendments, offers, whatever the case may be.
Senator Fischbach, Senator Cohen, and I'm sure Representative Erdahl will be talking more, but it's my understanding that we'll start working through some of the same and similar language and more discussion about some of the differences in the bills and take testimony as desired.
Yes. So with that, there's no objection. We'll do the daily gavel exchange, and hopefully in a couple of days we'll be done anyway. So with that, this case is closed.